Okay, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls. If you've had a reaction to a vaccine, your thoughts on vaccines with Jonathan E. Mord when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Jonathan E. Mord, of course, with us. Jonathan, what's up on your plate these days? What are you doing?
Well, I'm suing the Federal Trade Commission. I appreciate that we've defeated them in a first-round battle. It's kind of an unprecedented victory in their own administrative court, which they tend to win. You might not be surprised. So there's a very important case. It's called ECM Biofilms case. It's up on appeal. And there are a number of other appellate cases we're working on now. And then we're also battling efforts to deny individuals the right to freedom of choice and choosing the medical treatment of their desire when they're terminally ill. We've been doing that for many years. Senator Rand Paul has a bill. There are other members on the House side that have a bill that we've written. And we're hoping someday sensibility will reign in Capitol Hill. It doesn't appear to be anytime soon, unfortunately, but a lot of people are suffering out there, George.
Yeah, they sure are. And it's a very unfortunate situation. Other countries, do they force vaccinations on their population?
It's kind of a mixed bag, but most of the industrialized world does favor mandatory vaccination. And I think in our country, it really does make a mockery of the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, the substantive due process rights to life and liberty. And I think this Jacobson decision, which we mentioned from 1905, which is the case always cited,
archaic.
The courts sort of uniformly uphold it, is anachronistic. It's way out of sync with modern jurisprudence, which tends to protect your rights with a high degree, strict scrutiny, and it really applies virtually no scrutiny, kind of broad deference to the state's police power, and just is out of sync with what we do. When you think about it, you know, we have the Cruzan decision of the Supreme Court where an individual who is in imminent peril of death, who could be treated by a drug that the medical establishment says will cure them, has the right under the 14th Amendment, 5th Amendment due process clause to refuse treatment and die. And that right, which I think that's the correct answer to that question, you have that constitutional right, is quite a bit different, isn't it, when we look at the right of an individual to avoid vaccination. It's just virtually no right, in fact, in this country against avoiding forcible vaccination.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Taylor in Texas to get things started. Go ahead, Taylor.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Great, Taylor. Thank you.
I'm a little concerned about the it seems a little bit of misinformation here. Now, John, you're arguing that people have the constitutional right to avoid forceful vaccination. That's not a point I'm contesting, but it seems that you're also arguing for about 0.5% given the cases that have been won for vaccination injury that you cited versus the large assumption of around roughly 330 million Americans in this country that have been immunized in some form or fashion. That, you know, it's an extremely small percentage that you're arguing for the individual right for the protection of the country to stop spreading disease when diseases like polio, measles, things of that nature have been stopped due to a large part in vaccination.
Your thoughts, John?
Well, first, it's important to note that the Bill of Rights was expressly designed by James Madison to protect not only the majority's right for those same particular rights, but in particular, the rights of the minority. And so we oftentimes find tyranny that becomes widespread to have its origins in hard cases where individuals are dissenting. But also recognize that I'm not saying and didn't say on the program that I would be opposed to mandatory vaccination in every single case. I said that I wanted the standard to be strict scrutiny, and I wanted the government to have to show causality. In other words, that you as an individual who the government is saying must be vaccinated do in fact pose an imminent risk of contamination to the rest of the population or to specific individuals in the population.
John, but I've got a question.
That kind of proof, yeah.
This is what's so weird about this. Governments say that to protect the safety and the health of society, you must get vaccinated. So let's assume there are 100 people out there and 99 of them get vaccinated because they've either been forced to or they want to. But that one person hasn't been vaccinated, and government says you must get vaccinated. It's the law. Here's my question. If the other people have been vaccinated against a disease that is supposed to spread, why are they concerned about the one person who didn't get vaccinated if the vaccine they got is supposed to prevent it from happening in the first place?
Precisely right, George. Precisely.
That makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And this whole idea, you know, it's a socialist idea, isn't it? That it's a national socialist or fascist idea, this notion of herd mentality. Look, everyone must be vaccinated or we're all at risk. Well, that's not true. You're at risk in a particular circumstance if you have evidence that is sufficient for us to show that you are at risk. But what they're doing is applying a broad stroke. They're saying, if you're not vaccinated, you pose a risk, but they're not proving it.
I mean, what they're saying to me is, and this is kind of underneath the table, but we're not so sure, this is government speaking, that vaccines work because we need everybody vaccinated in order to prevent this disease, because we're not sure if somebody has this disease, if a person who's vaccinated won't come down with it.
Well, not only that, they know scientifically that even if everyone's vaccinated, some will still contract the disease because vaccines are not perfect.
They're not perfect.
Furthermore, it is impossible to ensure 100% vaccination. What they call for is actually impossible to achieve. You cannot cause every human being in the United States to be vaccinated for a particular vaccine. It is impossible absent the most gruesome police state imaginable, unless you, because even simple error in record keeping,
people,
it is impossible to know
people
whether
who,
everyone has been vaccinated.
People who have been vaccinated against the flu still come down with the flu.
Right. The medical establishment, this is a very simplistic, when you think about it, it's rather a sort of a dumb system, isn't it? Where you have a vaccine, which may be almost perfect. In the best circumstance, let's say that a vaccine, if everyone were vaccinated, would have 98% effectiveness. But there's still that remaining 2%. When you're talking about 350 million people, that's quite a few people. Well, you can't have perfection in the system. The whole idea, the argument for 100% vaccination is predicated on a fiction that if everybody's vaccinated, there won't be that disease. Now, I don't mean to say that there aren't good arguments for specific kinds of vaccines and people who are vaccinated, but I'm saying that this is something that needs to be communicated and debated, and not something that we should use the power of the state to compel people to be vaccinated unless in a specific instance the state has enough evidence to show that that individual who's not being vaccinated causally poses a risk that's imminent to others and less restrictive alternatives are unavailable. If less restrictive alternatives are available, if you tell me, look, if you want your child to go into this public school where there has been a measles outbreak and you're not vaccinated, then you're going to have to show me that you've used all other means short of that, well, you know, what about wearing a mask? What about wearing gloves? What about keeping the child out of school during the period of hazard? Why not put the child in another school, another public school? Aren't these alternatives that we as an intelligent people can use before we strap someone down and force them to be injected?
You would hope so.
But it's not. It's not the law, and it should be. And if the standard under the 14th Amendment substantive due process that applies in every other circumstance were applied here, it would be the law.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Joan is in St. Louis. Hey, Joan, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Gerard.
Hi, Journey.
This is your MSG lady.
The MSG lady. Used to be on my local Nighthawk show talking about MSG. You're the one who got me off MSG, I think.
Well, I hope I helped you.
Yeah,
that's
you
my
sure
goal
have.
To help everybody. I don't want anybody to suffer like I did with that stuff.
No, not at all.
The reason why I'm calling is because, number one, I did have a very violent reaction to a tetanus shot, and that was about 1999, I guess it was, when I had a rusty saw blade fell on my foot, and the doctor said, well, you have to get a tetanus shot. Yeah. I said, I can't take it. Well, we'll give you the gamma globulin. Well, oh my gosh, my arm swelled up like a football. But
and that's supposed
anyway, that's
to be a safe shot.
Shot that I've had, and the last shot I intend on taking.
No flu shots,
because,
nothing.
These vaccines and shots and so forth all have a preservative in it. I can never take those shots because I can't take the chance of the preservative reacting against me.
John, a lot of people have that problem, don't they?
Well, yes, and you know, her reaction, I mean, this is not something that's atypical in the universe. I mean, reactions to vaccines are rather common. They aren't as well reported as they should be, but just think in your own circle of friends how many people have said to you that they've taken their child in for shots and, gee, we had a reaction. I mean, my own children had an adverse reaction to a vaccine. They had a raging, both of them, they're twins. They each had the vaccine at the same time. They had a raging fever. They had minor convulsions, were shaking. I talked to their pediatrician, who's completely unhelpful, and said, well, you know, this is sort of what happens, and just hang in there, they'll be all right. And then I talked to my good friend, Dr. Charles Simone. He said, oh, no, you better be careful. We got to get the temperature down. We got to do these various things to make sure that they don't suffer long-term consequences. And fortunately, I had that expert advice at the time and followed it. But see, it's not something that is out of the ordinary. We see these things happen. What they consider to be an acceptable, quote-unquote, reaction is also troubling. They've tried to make vaccines, from a PR standpoint, appear to be so incredibly safe that only a complete moron or idiot would think not worth doing. But that's just not true. And I don't mean to say that vaccines might not be effective. They might not, you know, in a particular instance, I'm not a medical authority. But I do mean to say that I am quite clearly convinced that, as your caller's example shows, that we have a lot of people out there who have suffered adverse reactions. I have a friend who, his child was perfectly normal, mental capacity is totally normal, and they went through a battery of some 30 different vaccines in their first few years, as most kids do these days, and the child is now, you know, mentally challenged, can't perform well in school, and she's utterly convinced that it was because of the vaccine. Mm-hmm. There was no other change in the child's behavior. And the child's own physician thinks that as well. So, I mean, we don't have perfect knowledge. We don't know what we're doing in the case of vaccination is perfectly safe. We have proof that it is not, quote-unquote, perfectly safe. And so when someone exercises a judgment that they don't want to do this, they should be respected. And unless there's a compelling state interest for their judgment to be overridden, we should, consistent with the Constitution, the right of liberty, freedom of religion, let these people alone.
Is every state law different, or does this all fall under the federal guidelines?
Each state law is different. This is a police power function. Ever since Jacobson's been fully recognized as a state issue, there have been attempts to create federal laws that would preempt state law and have a massive national system of vaccination. There are certain reserved emergency powers kept by the executive, presumed by the president, to forcibly vaccinate people, let's say, in the event of a biological attack or something. So there, you know, these rights are precarious. And I'm not saying, and I haven't contended here, that there are no circumstances conceivable in which an individual's right to liberty cannot be overridden by a compelling interest in the government to vaccinate them. But I'm saying that that is an exceptional circumstance. That is a rare occurrence, and that we ought to be respecting people's right to dissent rather than disrespecting it. And we ought to be very mindful of the fact that once you go down this road, as we have, it really doesn't take much for the legislature to say, upon scientific evidence that comes out, let's say, on hereditary disease, that, gee, it costs the state too much, it's too much of a burden for society to have people out there with one disease risk or another, and it's unjust and inappropriate for certain people to have children because of these genetic risks, and they should have to be legally required to be sterilized or not procreate. You know, that's the kind of thinking that this this herd mentality idea, this broad generalized claim of a public interest has when you give such little regard to individual rights.
Let's go to Wayne now in Illinois. Welcome to the program, Wayne. It's good to have you on the air with us.
Oh, thank you, George. We love you out here.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, I just want to make a few comments. First of all, there's a doctor by the name of William Thompson. He works for the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, and he's a CDC whistleblower. He says that the CDC has known for the last 13 years that the MMR vaccine, which is mumps, measles, and rubella, it causes autism. You have another CDC whistleblower by the name of Dr. Donald Henderson. He says that the mumps vaccine is not even necessary. The thing about the MMR vaccine is that when you inject all three of those viruses into a person, they interfere with each other, and they alter the immune system. And also, Merck is the only one who has the mumps vaccine.
That's right.
And what they have in that mumps vaccine is mercury, formaldehyde, which is embalming fluid, aluminum, monosodium glutamate. So, for instance, right now, the mercury in a GlaxoSmithKline vaccine, GlaxoSmithKline, for people who don't know, that's another pharmaceutical company. The flu vaccine right now has 25,000 times more mercury than it's supposed to have because the government sets in what's called an acceptable level of mercury. Now, we all know there's no acceptable level of mercury.
Hold on, Wayne. We're going to hit the break. I'll come back with you, and we'll get Jonathan to react in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we call our television program Beyond Belief. All kinds of incredible programs there that you can look at for 10 days free by going to our website. Take advantage of it, beyondbelief.com. Also, you can hook it up where it's on your big flat screen. BeyondBelief.com. Well, are you prepared for the unexpected? Some people are. A lot of people aren't. One thing I would suggest, storable food for the future. You buy as much as you want. It's good for 25 years. But here's what My Patriot Supply has for you. An incredible offer just for you. Right now, you can get a 4-week emergency food supply for only $99. Including free shipping. It's good just to have a pack of this on hand. Call 1-800-504-8370 to claim yours. The supplies will not last. It's 50% off the price you'd see online. And all Coast to Coast listeners should take advantage by calling the number, 1-800-504-8370. You can order that 4-week emergency food supply, and just remember, It's $99 plus free shipping. Be prepared. Call 1-800-504-8370. Welcome back. Jonathan Emord with us, and let's go back. Let's see. Wayne is no longer with us. But what he was talking about, of course, was all the stuff they put in.
Well, that's right, George. You know, people don't realize it, but in this country, as the associate director of the FDA Office of Drug Safety, David Graham, said famously now, that we are virtually defenseless against unsafe drugs in this country. And the reason for that is that there really is no independent evaluation of safety of drugs, including vaccines. All of the evaluations the government looks to come from the company that is selling the vaccines itself or the drugs themselves. So they have an inherent conflict of interest. They have an interest in representing the substances to be perfectly safe or as safe as one would expect them to be. And yet, in fact, there are these types of problems. So for years, there were instances in which a large number of vaccines contained mercury. And that was deemed to be unsafe, but it went by without notice for decades, and complications associated with it went by without notice or understanding, because it simply was not known that mercury was a constituent part of the vaccines. It's this sort of thing, George, the absence of true safety assessment that poses a perilous risk. And when it comes to vaccines, they're no different from drugs in general. We simply don't know in this country whether there is an independent, solid foundation to critically assess the safety of a drug. We're just basically, as David Graham said, virtually defenseless.
It is one of the single worst decisions a parent has to make, because they don't want to make a mistake, Jonathan. They want their child taken care of. They don't want them sick. And they're on the fence of whether you vaccinate or not. It's very frustrating, isn't it?
It's an awful decision. It's a horrible decision that a person has to make. It's one of those things where the government is responding in this, in really the least intelligent way. Rather than bang a drum and tell people, you better do this, you better, they ought to go after the subject matter of the person's concern, that is safety. And they ought to devote their resources to eliminating safety risks. Are we not at a technologically developed state where we can take a look at these vaccines honestly and critically and assess the safety problems and identify those who are at risk and recognize them to be appropriate exceptions? Now, that not everyone is perfect for this. We've discussed that in the program earlier. As a consequence, shouldn't we intelligently devote medical resources and science to the issue and identify those who are at risk? That's not happening. Instead,
no.
They're taking this sort of blind, blunt method of saying to everyone in a dictatorial or authoritarian manner, you be vaccinated. Yes, some of you will be injured permanently. That's part of the risk we must take. You all must be vaccinated.
Next up, we go to Vanessa in New York. Hi, Vanessa. Go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Got two quick comments, if I may. One about flu shot, one about the real reason for the polio thing. According to the Center for Disease Control, it used to be on their website, people who receive the flu shot are supposed to self-quarantine for 17 days, stay out of elevators, etc., which, of course, they don't.
You can't.
Apparently, they're the ones that are most contagious. I had a huge problem. Went to a movie once with someone. Within about 15, 20 minutes, I never get sick. My throat was scratchy. My sinuses got so crazy, I had to go into the lobby. I was coughing like crazy. Found out the day before my friend had gotten a flu shot. Now, with the polio, the real reason about the polio, what they call the polio epidemic, it was something that they were injecting into cows. There was some sort of chemical neurotoxin that was being injected into cows, and the milk products were contaminated such that children who drink a lot of milk were getting what they called, what they're calling polio. And when they stopped supplementing the cows in this way, the polio epidemic went away. So that was a bunch of propaganda, this, you know, government crap, excuse me, you know, claiming that, you know, this polio vaccine, you know, wow, miraculous, got rid of it. No, that wasn't it. And, you know, George, you brilliantly brought out the point, you know, if these people think that taking a vaccine is going to give them some sort of immunity, then why the heck do they care if I choose not to get one?
That is so bizarre, Vanessa and Jonathan. That's the thing they just don't seem to get in the argument. You get the vaccine to prevent getting a disease. So if somebody else has this disease, but you've been vaccinated, why are you concerned?
Yeah, there are a lot of really fundamental questions that go a lot into whether mandatory vaccination makes sense. There's so many questions that arise, and yet when it comes to answering them, you'll find virtually no answer coming from the other side. And the reason is that they are entirely dismissive. They believe they have won the debate. Basically, they think that any evolution and discussion over this is over. They take 1905 and the Jacobson decision as sort of you know, something that is written on the ten, you know, among the Ten Commandments, and that it will never change ever, and that you just better get ready because sooner or later we're going to knock on your door and demand that you'll be vaccinated. It is amazing to me that so many people who are mouthpieces for medicine take this position. I mean, I'm sure many of your listeners have gone into a pediatrician's office and had the pediatrician look aghast at them and basically browbeat them and threaten them when they've said, you know, I have my doubts about this particular vaccine. I don't want my child to have that vaccine. Well, you become a pariah. I mean, they look at you as if you are one of the most loathsome creatures on earth. And yet, you know, we are intelligent people, and as your listeners are showing, you know, there are many reasons for concern. And when someone decides, I don't mean to cast aspersion on those who choose to be vaccinated. And if they've weighed in their own minds the risks and benefits, their own conscience, their own religion, they've decided that this is okay for them, well, more power to them. I hope that they'll get through the process without suffering any long-term consequences. But for someone who has the other scruple in mind, well, let's respect them. Let's respect and appreciate that they're intelligent. In fact, the vast majority of those who elect not to be vaccinated are among the most prosperous and intelligent people in our country. They're conscientious. They're not doing this because they're renegades. They're doing this because they love their children. They're not doing this because they're ignorant of science. Most instances, they're rather intelligent about it. They've researched it, they've thought about it intensely, and they've decided that the risks don't warrant the procedure.
As of right now, in most states, if a parent does not get their baby vaccinated, what happens?
Well, in some states, you have to be vaccinated with certain vaccines, most states, right at birth. And there's an increasing tendency to make a number of vaccines, ever-increasing number of vaccines, ones that are required immediately after the child is born. The reason for that is that the state can exercise control over the hospitals, and the hospitals have control over the mother, and the mother is not in a position, usually the family is simply not in a position because of the ordeal of childbirth, to raise objections. And so, you know, I think most women who have had children in the last 10 years appreciate that oftentimes you're just asked to sign papers and you do so because you just want what's best for your child, but you're not in a position physically or mentally to cope with, you know, a detailed analysis of it at the time. So there is that tendency. Of course, entry into public schools is often predicated on vaccination. Increasingly, it's become a matter of challenge when someone tries to object on some conscientious grounds or religious grounds. There now it's not uncommon for the schools to ask questions, to probe further. And this is all not good. I mean, this is a situation, as I say, when it comes to religious objections, that the state has no power, really, under the First Amendment, to go beyond simply asking you, what is the basis for your objection? If they start saying, well, is your religion true, or is this really a tenet in your faith? All of that is nonsense that exceeds the scope of the limitation on the of the First Amendment, which is to disarm the federal government and the state governments of any power whatsoever over religious liberty.
Got to be frustrating for people. Let's go next to Tim in Wichita, Wichita Falls, Texas. Go ahead, Tim. You're up with us.
Good evening. Thank you both for taking my call.
You're welcome.
First, I'd like to say thank you to both of you and Seth. The explanation of personal autonomy that you offered was probably the best description of American liberty I think I've ever heard.
He's the best.
Yep. I was wondering, do you know of any recourse and stuff that would be out there for someone who's vaccinated in the 50s and 60s? I have a sister that had an allergic reaction to a vaccine she was given, and it was established at the time that the vaccine was the cause of the reaction, and she suffered permanent brain damage.
And that would include us, Jonathan. We were the product of those early vaccines.
That's true. Well, I guess in the first instance, the question is, whether or not there is the particular vaccine on the vaccine table that is a part of this federal law that we've been talking about, the National Vaccine Law, and if they have a provision that if it was added later and you're within 4 years of its addition, you can then sue under that statutory provision to get money from this fund we've been talking about, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. So it's worth taking a look at to see whether or not a particular vaccine was covered and when it was covered and whether you're within the time period that is allowable under the statute for suit. But in most instances, sadly, for those of us who were vaccinated in the 50s and 60s, if we had an adverse reaction, we were likely not to be able to sue under that statute.
Look, this fast blast in from Mary in Pennsylvania. I just want you to know our six-month-old baby girl vaccinated in 1963 for smallpox and developed encephalitis. She nearly died, had brain damage. Now she's overcome most of the damage with vocal and physical therapy over the years, but still has some problems because of it. They just keep coming in, Jonathan.
Well, they do, and this is not, as I said before, you know, this is not something that is out of the realm of reason or so rare a circumstance that we ought not be concerned. There are plenty of adverse reactions that run the gamut from elevated fever and convulsion-like symptoms like my children had, to severe problems with mental disability, physical disability, and even death. And it is a frank admission of that they created the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. It's kind of ironic, isn't it, that at the same time that they have a $3.3 billion fund in place, they the CDC and the state authorities and medical authorities preach to the public over and over again, vaccines are safe, and you must be vaccinated and get vaccinated every year for the flu and so on. I mean, there is a disconnect between those two, and there's not a frank discussion going on about it. It's time for the government, for medical authorities to fess up and explain that, yes, indeed, people are suffering adverse consequences, and they don't have the answers for that, and they don't have a way to prevent that from happening, and they don't even have a way in place to determine who's at greater risk in the population and segregate them. They can't do that, and that's a real problem. All it takes is that if you're the unlucky one who's at risk, and you go in believing faithfully in what the government is telling you, and you get vaccinated and you experience that risk, I mean, the horrors can be devastating and for a lifetime, and can even take someone's life.
Sure can. Let's go to Mike in Cleveland, Ohio. Get your question in here. Michael, go ahead.
Good evening, George and Jonathan.
Hi.
Gentlemen, when I was in second or third grade, would have been the early 1970s, our classroom was sent down to the nursery. Being curious, I saw kids coming out of the nursery with that red donut circle on their arm. Not to pardon, I'm a little nervous.
That's right.
So I kept moving to the back of the line, In the end, I refused to cooperate, went into a kind of a tantrum mode. They started berating me. What would my parents think? And I would be in trouble. And in the end, they went and got my first grade math teacher, who was a tenant in our house. So apparently they thought maybe they knew me better. So they brought that teacher down to the nursery, and they orchestrated restraining me, as again, they teased me for being a baby, that it really wouldn't hurt that much. And then they shot me with that gun. So within a year, I was sent to a psychologist. Remember, I got to leave school early every Thursday for about 11 weeks as a kid in elementary school for being a disruptive kid. So simply, I was in the 70s. My question, Jonathan, is do you think it's unsaid common practice to dismiss children's rights in the field that refuse shots in a public school setting?
I think you're right. I mean, a lot of this now happens in the area of presumed ADHD or ADD. And, you know, there's this enormous overprescription of those kinds of drugs. And it's just a characteristic, unfortunately, of the public school system that when it comes to these kinds of issues, there is not a reasonable protocol in place. Of course you don't have. I mean, of course in your situation, the prudent thing would have been, obviously, to say, okay, let's remove him from this circumstance. Let's let him talk to his parents. Let's talk to his parents. I mean, reasonably, you would deal with something other than forcibly restraining a child, creating an enormous psychological trauma that would affect them for the rest of their lives. And that's just ridiculous. You mean to tell me that the vaccine was worth that? I mean, my goodness, that's we know children are impressionable. We know that they suffer long-term psychological consequences from circumstances where enormous pressure is applied to them, and there's confusion, and there's a medical procedure involved. All those things can create lifelong consequences. So what they did was essentially take the risk that you would be scarred for the rest of your life in exchange for a vaccine that may have been entirely unnecessary in your particular case. And that, I think, is not their call. And I think to do that is a gross violation of your rights. And I think that when children are forced to undergo procedures and in such a circumstance as that, without question, it's a violation of right. And it should be penalized. I mean, the state should not be able to get away with this. And sadly, they do. I imagine there are literally hundreds of thousands of people in this country who have been medicated against their will and as a part of the public school system, oftentimes with psychoactive drugs.
Happens all the time. All the time. Jonathan, we are out of time. Thank you for enlightening us about this incredible, bizarre story of the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. How weird is that? How weird is that?
Thank
Jonathan,
you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Up next, of course, St. Paddy's Day. That means Dr. Christian Von Laer joins us with his incredible work, The Magic of Gnomes and Leprechauns, and all kinds of things next on Coast to Coast AM.